Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it. Black, white, right, left. Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is once again in session. We are once again together in person, although we are maintaining a safe social space, which is a good thing because COVID is far from over. And in fact, in the state of Ohio, now if you are in public and cannot maintain a safe social distance, it is mandatory to wear a mask, and a ton of people have lost their shit over this, which annoys me to no end. Your thoughts, sir?
Yep. So if you have a medical condition or you're exercising or eating, you don't have to wear a mask, which, you know, there's a number of people, you know, already trying to figure out what their medical condition is so that they don't have to wear one. Exercise. So if I'm in the gym, I wore a mask in the gym for a couple of workouts, and then a number of people, you know, who are very anti-mask pointed out, you don't have to wear one in the gym. You don't have to. Okay. So I did. And part of the reason was it really wasn't that big of a hindrance for me to work out in a mask. Like, it wasn't. The issue is my mat, the type that I have, kind of pulls up from my neck up over my mouth and nose. And the material that it's made out of, once it got saturated with sweat, it actually started to almost like suffocate me. So, maybe I should, if that were a requirement, then I would have to, you know, get multiple or find a different material, whatever. But it really wasn't that big of a deal. So if I needed to wear one, I could, if they were requiring it. But we have people that are pissed off. There's a lot of people in my gym are very anti-mask. This is the government overstepping its bounds. They can't make us do it. They're violating our constitutional rights. Mind you, those same people, if you ask them if they've actually ever read the Constitution, the answer is no. And the one kid, because one kid comes to me, he's like, hey, do you know a lawyer? And I was like, oh, maybe I do. What do you need? He's like, I need to talk to a lawyer. I was like, so-and-so, I am.
That's, you are talking to a lawyer.
Right. He's like, constitutional? Like, yeah, study the Constitution. I get it. Okay. So I don't think that they can make us wear masks. And it's violating my constitutional rights. No, that's not it. So here's the issue with wearing a mask and your constitutional rights. The state can say, listen, these are the guidelines. This is what you need to do. And a private business can say, you can't come in here unless you have a mask on, right? Like, they say, you can't come in here if you don't have a shirt.
Right.
You can't come in here if you don't have shoes. You can't come in here if you don't have on pants, right? Or something covering your lower extremities. But so they can also say that about masks. So these private entities have every right to tell you that, like, you can't come in their place of business without X, Y, or Z, right? And as for the government, this whole thing with – you know, issuing penalties and citations and things like that. So if the cities were smart and the cities or state are smart, then they're not going to issue penalties and citations. Because once you issue the penalty or the citation, then a person could actually sue and challenge this whole idea, right? And so now it's going to depend on dog sitting.
We have a dog sitting, and a dog apparently is unhappy with the mask mandate and feels it is a constitutional violation of her rights. Yeah. All right, now we're back. All right, we're back.
Okay, sorry about that little technical difficulty. I had to take a pause there. But where the state, your local municipalities, where they would be smart, is they say, listen, you need to wear a mask. We're mandating that you do it, but not issue citations over it. Now, this is a little tricky workaround because, like I was saying, if they issue a citation or something like that, then someone could take it and say, I've been aggrieved and I now have standing to bring a case against the state to fight and combat this particular mandate. And while I believe that the states and the law dictates the way the law reads, you can I think, come to the conclusion that the state has the ability to do this. We're in such a hyper-political state right now that there's a lot of activism going on the bench with judges on both sides of the aisle, conservative, either, you know, I support Trump and, you know, so I'm going to make a decision based off of my support of him, or, you know, I hate Trump and I'm going to make a decision based off of my hate for him and, you know, the people on the conservative right, which is a sad state of affairs, but it's just kind of where we're at. That's the reality of it. So if the state were smart and our local municipalities were smart, they would stay away from this whole thing where we're going to fine you and we're going to issue a citation, because then they're going to find themselves in a court battle where I don't think they should lose, but they could lose, and not because of the merits, but just because of people want to make this particular statement.
And even if they win or lose, the fact that courts are going to spend time, money, and energy on that means they're not spending time, money, and energy on shit that, not to be totally dismissive, actually matters. I mean, if you're going to be in a place where you have to be in someone else's space, it's just a courtesy thing. And it's not that fucking complicated to me.
Yeah. And I mean, here's my issue. I think, you know, it's funny. You have all these people who have never written a research paper, never written a peer-reviewed, you know, paper, have never read a peer-reviewed, you know, research paper, right. Never have
done. Which, by the way, I have done.
Right? And so have I. And no one has done, you know, a lot of these people have not done, you know, have not done any sort of medical or scientific research or anything along those lines, but yet they're demanding that they see more evidence and more proof of this, and it needs to be explained. And you know, like, well, these numbers don't make sense. Like, well, do you understand how to read these numbers? I think so. Yeah. I mean, you just look at the numbers on the page. Well, no, it's not quite that simple.
You can make numbers say almost anything you want. Right, exactly. If you have a motive, you can make
it. But the problem is that's their whole defense, right? Like, well, you can make numbers say anything you want, right? Because people say that all the time and they don't know what they're looking at to begin with. So it's easy for them to say these numbers could say anything, right? And these numbers aren't accurate because they're different than these numbers over here.
Right.
Not looking into the reasons why that they're different, or if there's an actual plausible explanation for why the numbers may be different and what they're representing. So, you know, you have all these, you know, kind of wannabe scientists and scientific journalists and all this other shit, which, you know, and they're out there demanding that you know, someone shows them, you know, these, you know, extra levels of proof of this, you know, proof that coronavis is, you know, is real and deadly and blah, 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 when it's, you know, it's 99.5% survival and all this other shit, which is all well and true. But the problem is that even a percent or a half a percent is hundreds of thousands of people, which that's the thing that we're trying to protect. And people have this whole idea of, you know, people are going to die anyway.
Right.
So,
well, you know, if it doesn't affect you, it's easy to dismiss it. But when it does,
exactly. I mean, it's just that, and when you've seen this thing kill people close to you, whether it's, you know, for me, it's killed a college teammate and a coworker. My sister got it, and it had a really big negative impact on her and her life. She had to quarantine. She had to quarantine for 3 weeks.
Was readmitted to the hospital.
You know, had to go back to the hospital because of chest pains and things like that, and then ended up going back to work. And then they put her on the COVID positive unit. They're like, well, you already had it. So I this whole idea of, well, it only affects this small percentage of people, so we can't live our lives in fear, so let's just roll with it. I just think when you're dealing with something that's relatively new, and this is new, that we need that certain precautions need to be taken. And so if they're saying, listen, wear a mask, you know, something over your face to prevent and protect from the projectile coming out, to protect yourself and to protect other people, that will help slow and stop the spread of it. Then they're not really asking you to make that big of a sacrifice. They're not asking you to do anything that actually truly hinders you in any sort of way. It's a protective measure, that even if it's only a 50% effective, Well, I mean, listen, that could be saving any, you know, could be saving hundreds of thousands of lives. You know, if it's preventing the disease from spreading or slowing it down. You know, when you look at places like Japan and you look at places like Thailand and you even look at a country like Jordan, right? Jordan is a small Middle Eastern country, you know, right there next to Israel and surrounded by, you know, Iran and Syria. Iraq and Syria and all the shit they have going on around them. But they've been able to get control. They did a very aggressive lockdown and, you know, they had people wearing masks and all that other stuff, which we could never get away with here. The countries that have suppressed this and really gotten rid of it, they took extreme measures. They said, listen, we're going to shut things down. Nobody's going to work unless you are a cop, a fireman, or you work in a hospital. And, you know, the government is going to, you know, compensate you, and we're going to make adjustments. We're all going to work together. If you do it, go out. You have to social distance. You're going to wear a mask. We're going to take this serious for 3 months. And if you look at it, they've had really high successful rates of controlling this disease. Even the countries that were kind of on par with us, whether it's Italy or whatever, they took it serious, did an extended lockdown, like a true lockdown again. Only, you know, certain people were going out, not like what we did where, you know, everyone became, like, I was an essential worker, right? I mean, which, okay, but I definitely could have done my job from home, but, you know, I still was going to work every day. I think in this country, we're, like, with the attitude of the people and the government's not willing to kind of take the step that some of these other places are willing to take, we at some point in time, we're going to have to accept, like, we're just going to have to live with this until they get a vaccine and a treatment. And then we got those same people who don't want to take a vaccine. So this is just something that we're going to have to live with, unfortunately, I think.
I don't know. It's amazing to me how many countries are telling Americans, you can't come here right now. I mean, I told you before, I actually got a call about a gig project in Japan. And I asked my friend that brought it to my attention if it was a remote gig. And she told me, not only is it has to be, because they won't let your ass in right now.
Right.
But let me.
They won't let you in for a number of reasons, but the main reason being
COVID. That is not fair. They don't know that other shit. But let me ask you a question on a constitutional level that I genuinely don't know the answer to, but I'm very concerned about. There have been numerous videos showing federal agents detaining people in Portland, Oregon. Now they're sending federal agents into Chicago to quell violence, and they're coming to Cleveland too, I've heard. And from a constitutional level, my understanding is that the military cannot be used to control law and order in the United States unless extreme things are happening. But I don't know if that really applies here, because I think the people being deployed are like ATF and other federal agencies. So it's really not the military. You know, you watch CNN and it's, you know, it's the Gestapo, and you watch Fox and it's the president being Mr. Law and Order. I don't know what the reality is, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on knowing more about the Constitution.
So who's being deployed? Are they're from Homeland Security and, like you said, other agencies? There are also, you know, private security companies that have been contracted by the government.
So essentially deputized by the federal government?
Yes.
Okay, that makes me nervous.
And I believe it should. But at the same time, the president does have this within his power to quell violence and what you would call an uprising or something, you know, however you want to define it specifically. It's within his power to do. Now, it all depends on how you view what is going on in Portland, what is going on in Chicago. You know, whether it's in Portland, it's, you know, in Seattle, it's protesting, it's demand for change. And, you know, a lot of people have issues with that because, you know, a majority of the people there aren't violent. You know, I mean, Portland has two really, really bad examples where you've got, you know, mothers, you know, are locked with locked arms, being tear gassed and, you know, assaulted by police. And then there was a Navy veteran who couldn't believe that this was going on. He was, you know, was a 20-year Navy vet and retired. And he went out and he couldn't kind of believe what he saw. So he approached, there were Marines, or I forget what this, I think it was like the National Guard or something like that. But he went and, you know, just kind of questioned them, like, what are you doing? Like, don't you remember the oath that you took? And he got like the shit beat up. I mean, they hit him with a couple batons and, you know, tear gas and the whole thing. So, I mean, like, though, you got some bad scenes in this situation, but the problem, you know, everyone's saying that, you know, oh, it's innocent protesters, is that you have those people that aren't innocent protesters. You have those people where I don't care who they align with, whether it's Antifa or they all want to be a part of the Joker's crew from Batman and they just want to watch the world burn, or they're just anarchists in general, or they're just punk kids, whatever, whoever they are. They're there. They are causing disruptions. They are, you know, trying to spark confrontations, and they're successful at them. Whether it's breaking windows, setting cars on fire, looting, fighting with police, fighting with, you know, counter protesters. They're there, and that's all you need to see, or that's all the president needs to show to kind of support. What he's saying is, you know, like, the basically saying that the cities and the states have lost control of the situation. These protests, these riots, this looting, it's been going on for an extended period of time. It needs to stop. They've lost control. So I'm now sending in, you know, authorities from the executive level to quell the violence. And I mean, it's not what you want to see. And will people be able to challenge it? And I say we, because those types of authorities are being sent here to Cleveland. Now, Cleveland, it's funny, the Cleveland police put out a tweet saying, oh, well, it's not enforcement. It's just, it's federal investigators. Federal investigators are coming to investigate the violence with the city of Cleveland and the state of Ohio to figure out what the best approach is to, you know, keep violence from breaking out. So they're labeling it as being proactive, and they're calling them federal investigators. But I'm sure that those investigators are going to come with tactical gear and riot gear, you know, ready to jump into action if need be. So, you know, I mean, there are some constitutional questions, and I think especially what we saw in Portland with these officers, there's going to be some challenges to their behavior, right? And you know, they're also arresting people. Unmarked vans. We don't know where those people are going. So we're assuming a federal detention center. We don't know. I don't know specifically where they're going, and that hasn't been made public. So that's going to be problematic, and people are going to definitely raise questions about that.
You know, we talked, it was probably a couple of years ago on the show about that one black site in Chicago.
Yeah.
Where literally people are being detained without a charge being filed against them and unable to communicate. So this has been going on at the state and local level in Chicago for a while, which is not in any way to justify the federal
Chicago,
level.
Chicago is a little bit different because it's mostly local police, right? And I'm sure there were some task force that had federal agents that knew about the place and probably used it. But this is more just kind of straightforward. We're sending in federal forces, and these forces are there to quell the violence. They have, you know, limited and few restraints, and they're going to use, you know, the what they believe the necessary appropriate level of force, and, you know, decide what the measures are going to be. And that's what we have going on. Constitutionally, I don't think there's much of a gray area. I think the president can do it. I mean, I know he can, but there will be challenges to figure out to kind of get
what the limitations are.
Yeah, to define what the limitations are, define what the lines and boundaries and parameters are, and if he overstepped them or what. Chicago's different because I don't think he's sending them there. He's not sending them there for the protests. He's sending them there for the violence that has existed in Chicago for the last, I don't know, 40 years, right? So that'll be a different conversation than what is happening in Portland.
Right. And I'm concerned about multiple things here. One is constitutionally what's right and wrong. Two, what does this say about the federal government's role in policing on the streets? Because that's something that maybe I'm exaggerating that as what's going on now, but if that ever gets to that point, that to me is fundamentally, if you're a conservative and that doesn't really offend right. you, if you're a Second Amendment advocate that says the, you know, we need guns to protect ourselves from a tyrannical government, this should be basically what you're talking about.
Yeah, but they, I mean, ultimately people, that's true, but people like don't want police until they want them.
Sure.
Right? You know what I mean? It's just like they don't, you don't, you know, everyone talks about limited government and fuck the police and, you know, all that shit is right and, until all of a sudden, like, you need the police, right?
Right.
And it's just like, I don't agree with, you know, like, you know, a person who would be okay with this is, I don't agree with Black Lives Matter. I don't agree, you know, I don't, so now there are very clear distinctions being made between Black Lives Matter, the group, the organization, the nonprofit, or they may be for-profit, I'm actually not sure. But the actual group that has a website, right, like they're saying that that's a Marxist organization that is hell-bent on taking down the federal government, right? So we have that, and then you have the actual Black Lives Matter movement, like, hey, police, stop, you know, beating and
killing
black yeah. people and all this other stuff, and we need to be, you know, fair. And so those are two separate things. But the people who don't like the group, the organization, Black Lives Matter, who link them and tie them to Antifa, and then who see all this violence as a result of Black Lives Matter and Antifa, the two organizations, they're all for this, right? They want this. They want the police, they want state police, they want federal police, they don't care who, just come in and shut those people up and get rid of them, we don't care, right? Like, they don't look at it as these are federal forces coming into sovereign states and, you know, doing things that we don't want our federal government to do, but they're okay with it because they don't, they're going to be ultimately happy with the end result, right? And it's not impacting them directly, as far sure. as they can see, so they're fine with it. And like, yes, they should be against it, but they're not going to be. I mean, practically speaking, we just know that they're not going to be. Right, because, yeah. I mean, they're cheering for this. They're rooting for it. And that's part of the reason why Trump is doing it, because he knows that in that particular group's eyes, like, they're going to be all for this, and that's going to get him brownie points. He's dipping in the polls. You know, he's having issues because it is seen that he's kind of losing control of this. He talks about how in Joe Biden's America, this is what things are going to look like.
Have you seen,
like,
that commercial?
Right. But the problem is, like, yeah, this is happening now under you. Right.
Right.
I mean, like, so, I mean, you can say it's going to happen in Joe Biden, but it's happening right now. And what are you doing about it? So this could be a response to that. This is probably also a deflection for any number of things that are happening outside of racial protests and, you know, violence in inner cities. You know, in COVID, like Trump's got a number of fires burning. So by doing this and sending out those federal forces, it kind of helps to focus people's frustration, anger, happiness, joy, whatever you want to call it, with in terms of their response to his action, this particular action, and it helps take the attention away from some of those other things.
Yeah, and you know, what you were just kind of alluding to is his numbers in the suburbs are terrible.
Yep.
And the people in the suburbs are the people who look at this and say, someone needs to get control of that. And that doesn't affect me. I mean, you know, these are not people who live in the cities or work in the cities typically. And it's easy for them to look at this just on Fox News and say, well, in this case, I think he's doing the right thing. And he recognizes his numbers are terrible right now. And while he won't acknowledge that those numbers are real, I think he knows that they actually are. I'm also really confused about his response to Ghislaine Maxwell, which I think he's gotten way more of a pass on than he deserves. I mean, we've, I think, left him alone on that.
He's received a lot of criticism for this response. And you know, basically, he said, you know, he was asked about it in a press conference or in an interview. And he said, I wish her well.
Right.
And I think people's response to his response is overblown. I don't think there's not much he can say. I think people want him to say, you know, we're gonna burn her at the stake. She's an evil witch, and we're gonna get everything out of her we can, and then she's gonna be thrown in a dark hole. I think that's what people want him to say. But I think the smart move, like, there's very limited. I think most of us look at it and say, look, she's in a vice. She's not getting out of it, right? Like, a lot of us, me, I'm not sure she gets out of it alive, right? Like, I mean, I think she ends up getting suicided.
Do you think they could really pull that off twice? I mean, I think lots of people, myself among them, believe that Jeffrey Epstein was...
There was no reason they should have been able to pull it off once. If they could do it with Jeffrey Epstein, they could do it with her, assuming that he didn't kill himself, right?
Which and, I am comfortable assuming.
Right, but I mean, I find it hard to believe, and she doesn't seem like the type that's gonna... I mean, she had reportedly stated that she's got evidence of people, you know, doing things with underage people, and she's got video, and she's got names, and she's got all the shit to burn. You know, Epstein was never openly said anything about burning anybody, right? Like, he wanted to keep it all, like, he was guilty himself, he was a target, but listen, so is she, right? Every victim that has spoken openly has said some very incriminating things about her and her behavior, whether it was grooming or recruiting or physical touch and, you know, sexual abuse. So she's guilty herself of these acts.
She's accused of them.
She's accused of these acts, right? Like, so, I mean, I'm not sure, like, she's singing a different song than Jeffrey Epstein was singing when he went in. So the question is, what's her chance of survival? I think are slim. But I think but if she doesn't get, you know, killed or disappeared or suicided or whatever, however you want to call it, Clinton or whatever we want to describe it as. I think Trump looks at it and any of us say, like, she's not going to walk free, right? Like, I mean, she's probably never going to be a free person again. So I think the smart thing was to just play this, like, good luck, bitch. Like, I mean, that's how I took it. Okay. The whole idea that he didn't go scorched earth on her. I mean, he's also got to tread lightly. Listen, there are a number of pictures with him and her.
That's where I was trying to go with that is, so when I said he's getting off easy, everyone seems to implicate Bill Clinton with Jeffrey Epstein for good reason. You've seen pictures with him. We know he was on the plane a bunch of times.
Right.
Trump has not gotten as branded by that as Bill Clinton. And I'm starting to wonder why. Because
I think
they're clearly buddies from back in the day.
Trump made it clear that he cut ties with Epstein in the early 2000s.
Right.
Now, the reason why is a little bit mixed. Right?
I heard it was over a real estate deal.
Some say it's over a real estate deal. Some, you know, Trump says it's because he found out that he was, you know, dealing with these underage girls. So he cut them off from Mar-a-Lago and that was it. But knowing Trump, I feel like chances are it probably had something more to do with the real estate deal that didn't go Trump's way. And if you're just being objective, right, Trump being petty, like, none of this is a surprise. Like, you know, screw you, we're not friends anymore because you got a deal that I wanted. Seems more like Trump than, oh, you're doing something nefarious and I don't want to be a part of this.
Right.
Like, come on now. But either way, whatever the reason was, he did it. He cut ties with the guy in the early 2000s where, you know, Clinton has been tied to him. Well, after that, on the guy's plane, you know, possibly going to the sketchy island. So, and also, here's the other thing. I don't know where the island falls in terms of jurisdiction, but that could make things a little more murky as well.
From a legal perspective.
But
if she was recruiting girls in Palm Beach,
yes, then that's... No. I mean, like, so absolutely, the stuff that she was doing on American soil... And there was plenty against Epstein, had he stayed alive, between New York and Florida, there's plenty. But in terms of these people who, you know, went on his plane to this island, I'm not sure how prosecutable they can be, or how prosecutable those various scenarios are, depending on jurisdiction and things like that. You also have, you know, like the lapse of time and all those sort of
statute of limitations.
Of limitations, things like that. So I'm not real clear on that, but the reality is if she can start to make the connections and she can say, here's the name, here's the date, here's the flight log, here's the video, or here is audio, or whatever, or just her account. right? Then all of those things, and she's naming names, all of those things are damning and have value. So it'd be interesting to get her on the witness stand or get her confessing in some way, shape, or form. And as it relates to Trump getting a pass, I don't know if he's truly gotten a pass. There are plenty of people, especially on the left, that have been very hyperactive about saying, you know, Trump and Epstein. I think the media is backing off of it a little bit because maybe there's still a shred of some sort of it's the president, so we want to be careful going down this road. They haven't shown that much restraint to this point, but maybe. I don't know.
So here's what it felt like to me. It felt to me, and I think maybe just because we're so recently out of the Roger Stone situation and the Michael Flynn situation, where it's like, if you don't, you know, ruffle the president's feathers, he will ultimately take care of you. He's coming up to an election that will either be a re-election where he's a lame duck for 4 years, or he's going to be on his way out. In either of those cases, he could get away with pardoning her or commuting her sentence, claiming she was treated unfairly.
Whoa.
And that's the vibe I got. In exchange for, you don't talk about that flight where you saw me with the 14-year-old. I'm not – there's no evidence there.
Wow. No evidence of that whatsoever. You can't get me to go down that road. I think Trump is a lot of things, but I'm just not willing to put him in the – I'm not willing to go there. I need to see something before I start accusing my president of that.
I want to be careful. I was tap dancing. I'm not accusing it.
Before I can even put on the top hat or the tap shoes for this dance, I need to see a lot more. And I think
if that's her get out of jail card, I would not be shocked. I guess is my way of saying it.
Okay. I mean,
you're right. I don't know.
Right. If you want to say based off of what we've seen with Roger Stone, but I mean, you know, Manafort didn't roll on him. You could say Manafort really kind of got it the worst out of the entire group, and you know, he's still in jail. And you know, we haven't heard about a pardon or anything like that from Trump to this point. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not willing to go there yet. We'd have to see a bit more to kind of like, look, if she,
I want to be clear. I'm not saying I believe this. That's what made the hair on my neck stand up. It was like, he's now sending that same kind of, you know, treated unfairly. I wish her well.
Well, he hasn't said that she's been treated unfairly.
Not yet.
And, you know, all he said was, you know, best wishes or I wish her well or whatever. That's it. And so I would take it very slow before we start to kind of connect those dots. If you want to put a placeholder there, that's fine. But
that's where I'm at.
I think that's as far as I would go with it.
That's fair. And I also don't know where to go with Trump's alleged use of the ambassador to Scotland, Woody Johnson, also owner of the New York Jets, and to whether or not he tried to get him to push the British Open to be played at a Trump golf course. Now, if he did do that, is that not like textbook emoluments clause? I mean, if you use the office to financially gain, that's prohibited by the Constitution, right?
Yeah, but I mean, look.
I don't know if he did it or not.
What are we going to do? We're going to try to impeach him?
No.
With what? 4 months to go to the election?
No.
I mean, again, it's one of those things that if he did do it, you write it on the board, somebody report about it, so, you know, let's get it documented. But the reality is, you know, it's not going to go anywhere. I know it's a pessimistic view and people are going to, you know, the people who hate Trump and your anti-Trumpers are going to jump all over me for it. But the reality is, like, you're not going to impeach him over that. Like, that's just, you're not going to get, because of the way your house is divided between, you know, the Congress and the Senate, your lack of time, you're just not going to get there.
Okay. So let me ask this strictly on a legal basis. If people were doing the right thing, and I'm making a jump here because I don't have the evidence, but if he were to use the office to,
yes,
then that's like textbook definition.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't disagree with it. He can't do it. You know, I mean, like, but there's, it's not the first time, right? I mean, just some of the stuff with, you know, the way he's used his hotels and his properties during the course of his presidency, have been violations of the emoluments clause. They just have been, but we're just not, we're basically, it's just being ignored. It's just like, it's not that big of a deal. Other guys have done worse. And so it's just not being, and part of it is you don't have the majority that you would need to actually do this from a political standpoint, and you don't have the objectivity to do this from, you know, an objective legal standpoint. Like, just no one's going to, like, the only way you could do it, you'd have to force it into the Supreme Court. But you're divided right down the middle between Congress and the Senate to get it there. So it's just not going to happen.
Right. Well, it's not going to happen prior to 2021. Now, if the Democrats maintain the House and gain the Senate and Trump wins re-election, that could be a different discussion.
Yes, it could be.
All right. So one other Trump-related thing that we can move on to, different corruption and more fun stuff, is Michael Cohen was sent back to prison, which we talked about on the last show, because he was seen out dining in fancy restaurants in New York City. And now the judges ordered him to be re-released.
Yeah, because they said, did you see why?
Because they said he was being retaliated against because he spoke poorly of Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I guess he's talking about releasing a book or something like that, and they felt that the court said it was retaliation against Cohen, and so then they re-released him, which I have no idea, right? I also don't know what the conditions of his release were into house arrest.
All right.
So if he wasn't supposed to be at the restaurant and he was there, then he violated, you know, the terms of his release, and they have every right to send him back. But if they gave him limited privileges to say that he could go to a certain place or, like, you know, within proximity of where he lived or which in New York may be the norm. I don't know. But I just think it's really, this is beyond criminal justice. This is very political.
Yeah. It makes us as a country look bad, in my opinion.
It does. There's a lot of things that make us look bad right now. You know, across the board, from, you know, the people, the anti-mask people, the anti-vaccine people, the people vilifying Bill Gates and
Anthony Fauci,
and, you know, Anthony Fauci, to the violence that's going, I mean, like, the violence that we've had going on here for the last 40 years, right, in your inner cities, and the fact that we don't have good solutions for that are being used and put into place wholesale across the board. You know, just the violence that we see in places like Chicago and Baltimore and Detroit and Cleveland, you know, especially in the summer, that makes us look bad, you know, as a country. And yes, there are reasons, but it still comes down to individual choice. And there's a lot of individuals making bad choices that makes us look bad as a country. And, you know, also just shit like this, you know, on, you know, the political infighting, you know, happening at the top of the food chain. You know, like, listen, I got friends and, you know, Canadian friends from Canada, you know, who send me texts all the time with just like, what the fuck is going on? Like, you guys are idiots. And it's just like, shut up, America's top hat. Like, no one wants your opinion right now. Like, I know I'm in the middle of a shitstorm. Right. I don't need your input.
And, we can also talk about the fact that Canada legalized weed, and all the reports are saying that has been a successful thing. They've avoided criminal issues, and they've seen a lot more money coming in, which is an issue I would love to discuss, but don't necessarily want to derail the conversation.
Just quickly with that, I mean, I think a lot of the "this is going to be problematic" stuff was just from it was propaganda from those companies that were looking to lose money, right, if weed was legalized. But I think what you're seeing is that a lot of those companies who thought they were going to lose money have figured out ways to kind of get their hands into the money pot. So they're starting to back off of it. And then once they really figure out how to monetize, and especially if they can squeeze out the little guy, then pretty soon you're going to see a push, a strong corporate push for legalization of marijuana in the United States, and it'll happen overnight. When that will be, I don't know. Probably by 2024, yeah, it seems like it could be a reality. I think with Trump, maybe a little bit harder with Biden, because Biden's stance on this is not good or strong, but,
right.
You know, we'll see.
Yeah, we talked about that, and I'm very frustrated with him on that issue. And we've talked enough about, federal corruption and federal issues. We don't have to leave Ohio to find some really good corruption stories, though. Representative Larry Householder is involved. Go ahead.
This guy and his – Larry Householder and his crew. So what they did was they set up a 501c4. And what that is, it's like a 501c3. It's a nonprofit organization, but this is, more of a social welfare where they take money in, and it's for the benefit of mankind and social welfare. And
sure.
Specifically, it was for energy independence and economic development. Okay, great. So what they did was Larry Householder was the Speaker of the House in the state of Ohio. He is Republican, or was a Republican Speaker of the House. And so he was basically running this nonprofit, which he was not supposed to be doing, and receiving large payments at the amount of $250,000 per quarter from a certain energy company that may or may not have its name on the Cleveland Browns stadium right now. So if you're local, that's not hard to figure out. And if you're not, it's
still not hard to figure out.
Still not hard to figure out, but it starts with first and ends with energy.
Ooh.
Wait. There may or may not be other words in between. There are not.
There are not. Okay. So we're not even pretending. Okay.
This company was feeding money into this nonprofit, and then that money was turning around and being used to fuel Householder's run for Speaker of the House, and then anyone who would support him received money as well into their campaigns. They ran, in 2018, they ran $1 million worth of ads in the state of Ohio in support of Householder and his and the people who they thought would support him, and a majority of all of them won. Now, you can't say it's because of the money that was spent, but it's hard to kind of remove the money from
money seems this. To matter in these things.
Right. And so the total came to like $60 million that went into this nonprofit. They used it for political reasons, and then a lot of it went to personal use, luxury boats, cars, trip to Vegas, all that sorts of stuff.
And it ended up totaling like $60
million. $60 million, right. Which is just...
That's like almost two seasons of Mike Trout.
yes, an absurd amount of money that went in. It started in 2017. So 2017, we're in 2020. So over the course of 3 years...
Million dollars.
Yeah, you're looking at about $20 million a year that was going into this. So all of this was... The role of the nonprofit was to get this thing called HB6, House Bill 6, which was to protect the two nuclear power plants here in Ohio that are failing, right? And so what this House bill did was it generated about $1 billion worth of tax money to go to these nuclear power plants to keep them open and running for a certain period of time. And so they spent a lot of time, promoting House Bill 6, and then anything that talked against it, then obviously they went back against the grain. That was what the money was supposed to be for. But he siphoned it off to use for his own election, then other people's elections. And then the company that was supporting this said, well, we want you to not only help get House Bill 6 passed, but we also want you, so people are really unhappy that it passed. So, there's legislation to get it overturned. We want you to get that booted out. And so, they just use this money for really, they were the, political arm of this energy company that was really fighting against, these two nuclear power plants failing. And it's a ugly scene. It's not good for the state of Ohio. You know,
lucky for him, there's so much shit going on the national level that he's not front page news.
Right.
This is a front page news story.
Right. I mean, like, listen, this is up there with Demora, and when the, you know, the people here locally in Cuyahoga County got caught up in the, you know, you know, corruption. Listen, when people talk about corruption and they talk about not trusting government, this is the sort of shit that they talk about. You know, a lot of people got manipulated in this. A lot of people were lied to about this. I mean, you know, I didn't particularly, I don't know if you remember what your vote was. I didn't vote for House Bill 6.
I don't remember what my vote was.
I just, you know, it seemed like a good idea at the time, but if they're failing, then maybe it made sense to let them fail. You know, I mean, it just, I didn't see what the point was, but they didn't really sell me on the idea of why we needed to bail these things out. Like, I get the idea of nuclear power being something that once you get it figured out, it's great and clean and efficient and all that other stuff. But, if they can't do it efficiently and in a way that's, that, you know, doesn't require billions and billions of dollars every cycle, then, you know, maybe this isn't quite what we thought it was in terms of, you know, a solution.
Well, nuclear power is a tricky thing to me because I am in favor of, you know, non-fossil fuel energy. So I probably would have voted for this. I mean, I don't remember in particular it being on the ballot and what I did. And this is, by the way, why I would love to have a mail-in ballot, because I could research this shit before I voted on it and sent my ballot in. That's a whole different conversation. But, you know, I see your point from a business perspective that if you are losing – if you're bleeding money in energy, something that has made money across the board pretty much since chopping down trees,
right?
Then maybe you don't get to play in this game. I actually have some connections in the nuclear industry from years ago where I know that there's – a ton of regulations, and there needs to be, because we've seen what happens when nuclear plants go bad. I never watched Chernobyl. I think you did.
Yeah.
And I know that was a reenactment, but still, what happened at Chernobyl happened in the early 80s and is still fucking people up today.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's nothing to be trifled with, but yeah, Larry Householder, you are so lucky that we get to talk about Ghislaine Maxwell and other shit and Prince Andrew.
I mean, he's still getting a lot of heat. I mean, obviously.
Oh, he's probably going to jail.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely going to jail unless he's got a get out of jail free card that we are not aware of to this point. But I mean, the guy's going to get it. He's going to get nailed with this. He's already been nailed. He's already been arrested. They sent agents to raid his farm. You know, and they sent agents and they went early in the morning. With guns a-blazing. So, I mean, I guess that's not what's supposed to happen, but it did again. So, anyway.
All right. So I brought up the Mike Trout thing as a joke because that guy's contract is ridiculous. It's actually and kind
this
of
what, like, because a lot of people said Roger Stone, like, oh, the agent shouldn't have been like, listen, this is what they do.
Yep. Right.
I mean, it's more often than not, that's how they're going in.
Listen,
if you ever see a picture of Larry Householder, he's not exactly,
physical threat.
Right. He doesn't look like like he's
Roger Stone could kick his ass.
Right. He does not look like a one man militia splinter cell. So,
yes, I believe he is not that. But anyway, brought up the Mike Trout contract, which has actually been one up now by Mookie Betts. Contracts are just amazing in Major League Baseball right now.
So, Mookie Betts is actually more than Mike Trout's?
It's the amount of the extension was more. So I think Mike Trout's extension was actually $360 million on top of what he was already getting, and Mookie Betts' extension is $365 million. So
crazy.
It's one of those things where agents like, you got to give my guy more than that guy because he's, you know.
I just don't know how you – I mean, is Mookie Betts
better than Trout?
Better than Trout as a player? I know Trout has had some injury issues in the past, so it just seems odd that you could – baseball is that out of whack where it's just like, hey, my guy's really good, and since you gave that really good guy this amount, you have to give my guy, you know, 5% more just because?
The fact that one guy's in Anaheim and the other's in L.A. might even play a role. Like, you know, It is crazy. But
I mean, this just does not seem sustainable in baseball.
I completely agree.
Like you can't, like, I mean, listen, you take a guy like Frankie Lindor, who is, you know, a Cleveland guy. He is a shortstop. He hits for power. He's very good defensively. He's got a million-dollar smile. He's got all the looks and whatever. His English isn't great, but whatever. The guy's
– he's a face of a franchise guy with playing, in my opinion, the toughest or second toughest defensive position at a very high level while also putting up great offensive numbers. And like you said, good-looking guy, big smile.
Right.
Very
– I mean, I just – like
he ain't staying in Cleveland.
He's not going to stay in Cleveland, which I mean, as a Cleveland fan, I can't even justify keeping him here, right? I mean, because
no, the Dolphins don't have that type of money.
Right? I mean, if they did, like, he would be the old, like, then they would have to come and sign me and you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and it's just like, all right, I can play first base, and, like, maybe if you get me LASIK, I might be able to hit a ball. Maybe. but I just, I can't justify keeping him here at, you know, more at a quarter of $1 billion or more.
Or more. I mean, right? Based on those contracts.
Listen, and I know for a fact that they offered him, you know, $175 million or something like that.
Over 10 years, like 3 years ago or 2 years ago.
And he basically laughed at it and was just like, are you crazy? Which I don't blame him. I don't blame him. As much as I would love for him to stay and say, listen, I just love Cleveland so much. No matter anything that I sign for is going to make my family generationally rich for the next 300 years, I still don't blame him because he can get that much more going to to a team that can afford it.
I don't blame him. I just don't know if – even if you told me, okay, we're offering you $175 million over 10 years – you're locked down, you're in Cleveland, and you're going to be undervalued at some point based on league what the league perceives. I just don't know how you can say no to that because it's guaranteed money.
Right. But you're going to
double it if you wait.
There's someone stand, like, so I'm in front of you with a contract, right? For $175 million. But there's somebody behind me with a sign like,
$350.
I've got $275. And then there's a guy behind him with another one that says, I've got $350. Right? Yeah. And like, we're all available. Sign that one because all you got to do is get through, you know, this season.
Stay healthy for three seasons. I understand. And it's going to be funny to talk about this in 10 years when Mike Trout's contract is at the end of its rope and they owe him $50 million a year.
It's just completely unlike the NFL, where the NFL front loads a lot of contracts, signing bonuses, all that other stuff. And then the bulk of it, like, you end up getting cut before any of it comes to a head. The team has a couple seasons of dead money where they're paying a lot of money and then they're rid of you and it's gone and it's over, where baseball is still – like, listen – I saw something ridiculous. Something is going to happen, right? Like, I forget what I sent you, but, like, somebody is going to stop being paid, and Bobby Bonilla is still going to be being paid by the Mets.
I was about to go there. Bobby Bonilla is paid until, what, 2032 or something?
I think it's 2035. I think it's almost – like, I think it's it's, you know, 2035. This guy's still getting paid $1 million a year, one of the greatest contracts ever just because it's just awesome.
And by the way, he wasn't that good.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't that good, but his agent was apparently a fucking Sith wizard lord. I don't know. But I mean, like, just like the guy's income is $1 million every year on top of whatever else he's doing.
Except in 10 years, we're probably talking about Mike Trout getting paid until 2055.
I mean, because they're going to have to spread that out all over the place. So, I mean, I still think Benias is more impressive just because of, you know, where he started. And had they paid him – because Benias' thing was, had they paid him up front, they just would have had to pay him like $20 million. But they didn't want to do that. So the way they spread it out, it's $1 million every year for, I don't know, 30 years or something like that. So, I mean, they end up paying him a lot more money over time. It's just crazy.
So, yeah. And I mean, I used to jokingly call something the Bobby Bonilla Award. It's when you ride someone's coattails. He hit right in front of Barry Bonds for years. Teams couldn't afford to pitch around him. And then he hit Andy Van Slyke in front of him, which put him in a position to have to be pitched to. And, hey, good for you. You're making $1 million a year more than me.
He was a solid player for the Mets.
Yeah, he was doing what the Pirates do. He was a solid player, but he was not what that contract came out to be.
Anyway.
Yeah, so we talked about this kind of passively a couple weeks ago that Mike Tyson might make a comeback, and it was talk that he might fight Evander Holyfield, and I was so adamantly against that. Mm-hmm. And if you were to say to me, name a worse idea, it would be for him to fight Roy Jones Jr. And let me be clear. I think Roy Jones is one of the greatest fighters of all time. He stayed too long at the fair, and he did weird shit with trying to – he moved up to heavyweight, and he won titles everywhere from middleweight to heavyweight. He got up to 202 pounds to fight John Ruiz and win a heavyweight title, and then tried to get back down to 175. But when he got up to 202, he did it while probably maintaining his body fat at 5%. And when you're shedding 25 pounds of muscle and water – to fight, you just can't do it. So the end of his career was not great. But in his prime, he was the most dominant fighter I think I ever saw.
Yep.
And the idea that
he was incredibly – like you physically could not hit him, right?
And he could hit you with a lot of power.
He hit you so fast and so hard, like you didn't realize what happened. Like Mike Tyson, like you saw it coming, but it didn't matter. And it just – like he would just devastate you, right? You're just right. Like, oh, shit. It's like getting hit by a Mack truck. Like you see it coming, but you can't get out of the way. Where Roy Jones, it was like getting hit with a 50 cal sniper bullet, right? Like you just – you hear the boom, and then the next thing you know, you're splattered all over the canvas.
I mean, you don't hear the boom.
Yes, exactly. You don't hear the boom, and next thing you know, you're splattered all over the canvas. Like, he was amazingly fast and amazingly quick, and a great fighter, and Tyson is Tyson. And so the fight marquee looks great. Mike Tyson versus Roy Jones Jr. The problem is the time.
Yeah.
Right? 2020.
Right.
As opposed to 1998 or whatever. And even by then, you know, like Tyson was not really a great effective fighter. I mean, he still could be, but he was obviously mentally not there.
Right.
But I'm not sure why they're doing this. I mean, Tyson looks great. Like, he's obviously been working out. Like, if you follow him on social media, on Instagram or his Facebook page, I mean, he looks better now than he did in 90, frankly, than he did in 99. You know, I mean, he's lean. He does not have, you know, as you refer to it, the old man body.
He looks great.
Right.
Showing him hitting the pads or hitting the bag. Yeah, he looks like he could still light someone up, and I'm sure he could. And Roy Jones.
And Roy Jones has never been out of shape. I mean, he's one of those guys who just, you know, is probably always going to run, jump rope, do sit-ups and push-ups. The question is, I'm not sure what this fight is going to look like. And
I think it's scheduled for 8 rounds.
Now, Mike Tyson did point out something, that he hasn't taken a lot of shots to the head, right? He's like, where a lot of these boxers, whether it's Evander Holyfield or Muhammad Ali or whoever, like, Mike Tyson hasn't taken a lot of punches, right? I mean, like...
Well, a lot of his fights were one round.
Where he barely got touched. Yeah, I mean, a lot of his fights...
not a knock. It just blows someone up and...
You know. Right, I mean, a lot of his fights... I mean, you know, like, he hasn't taken a lot of the, like, abuse physically that some of these guys have. So he's in a little bit of a different position, you know, fighting at an older age. You know, Roy Jones Jr.,
he barely got touched for the first 45 fights.
Right.
When he started getting touched, he got touched a lot.
Yes. And
he had some, I think Glenn Johnson knocked him out. I think Antonio Tarver knocked him out.
I know that Antonio Tarver knocked him down multiple times and won that fight. But
I thought it was TKO.
Okay.
I think it was. But even if I'm wrong.
Either way, yes.
At one point, Antonio Tarver couldn't carry Roy Jones's jock, and then Roy Jones slowed down to a point where he...
Yeah.
I'm kind of contradicting myself, because part of Roy Jones's problem was trying to get down to a weight that he had built himself up to, you know.
But he's also 50 years old now, or whatever.
47, I think. Is he that young? Is he younger than me?
No, I don't think Roy Jones is younger than you. I mean, I think he was significantly older than I was, so.
Well, I'm significantly older than you too. But anyway, I don't want to see this fight is my point. I would love to see these guys do some, if there was a boxing skills competition, I would love to see them showcase their talent and
hitting a heavy bag
I don't want either of these guys to get hurt.
Well, I guess what you should do is explain what you're against.
But I'm against these two great fighters who have an amazing legacy And I think, you know, Tyson is legendary, you know, good and bad legendary. Roy Jones, in my opinion, doesn't get as much respect as he deserves because he was so damn good early on in his career.
Roy Jones Jr. is 51.
51. Okay. A couple years older than me. I don't want to see one of these guys get tattooed with a shot. And I think they both still have the power. I mean, one of the axioms in boxing is power is the last thing to go. And that's been proven time and again. These guys still have the physical ability to hurt one another real bad. And I don't want that to happen to a 51 or 54-year-old man.
Agreed. We're definitely on the same page. The fight is scheduled to happen, and it looks like it's going forward. They've even got an undercard with, you know, Nate Robertson, former NBA player, and Jake Paul, who's a YouTuber.
From the Cleveland, Ohio area.
I guess, yeah. Nate, if you're listening, buddy, if this isn't a first-round knockout, just don't come home, okay? Don't come home.
You know
home.
What, though? So I don't know anything about Jake Paul. I know his Logan Paul's his brother, I believe.
You know way more than I do.
Okay, and I'm kind of embarrassed to know it. The only reason I know it is because Logan Paul embarrassed himself by being an asshole, like doing a selfie in front of a dead body in Japan, got a ton of
okay, blowback. What does that have to do with the fight?
Well, Logan Paul is a fighter. That dude he's a wrestler and he fought
MMA. Jake Paul, you mean?
No, I meant Logan. I don't know if Jake is in the same build or not, or the same ilk or not, but this kid might not be a joke. I thought Logan Paul was a joke, and then I watched some of his mixed martial arts fights. I'm like, okay, this guy can fight. Okay. And I don't know about Nate Robinson. I don't know, I know he's a former NBA player.
Obviously. Yeah, I mean, Nate Robinson's an athlete. I mean, what I was saying before was a joke. I just, obviously, bratty, obnoxious YouTube kids, like, you just want to see them all get knocked out.
I don't disagree with that for one second.
I don't know what sort of, like, I don't know if Nate, I don't know what his boxing background is. I don't think he has a professional fight under his belt, where I do believe Jake Paul has at least one. So we'll see where it all goes. Again, I mean, it's a pay-per-view event, so
The fact that those two get to ride Mike Tyson and Roy Jones Jr.'s coattails fundamentally bothers me.
I don't mind Nate Robinson. Nate Robinson was he's an NBA player for fucking 12 years, who, you know, played on some playoff teams and was a solid player. I mean, he played at the University of Washington, football and basketball. I mean, he had a tryout with the Seattle Seahawks, after he retired from the NBA. Like, Nate Robinson, like, if you're into the NBA, at any level, you'd know who Nate Robinson is. Jake Paul, YouTuber.
Yeah. Oh, yay. Look, yeah.
But, I mean, there's a huge age difference, too. I think Nate Robinson's like 31. This guy is 30 or is 23.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a huge age gap there. So you would hope Nate Robinson would just be able to use old
wisdom and
yeah, mature look, man I'm, strength.
I don't know.
He's not quite old enough for old man strength yet. Right. I don't know when that kicks in. I'd like to say
45.
Between 45 and 50.
All right. Yeah, I'm not saying I'm cheering for Jake Paul. I know nothing about him. No reason to like him or dislike him. I do share your view that you're on YouTube. Good for you. You play video games or
I mean, I guess it's just, I mean, like, if I could, I mean, like, I would love to sit here and you and I record and make, you know, millions of dollars off of YouTube. You know, I mean, Joe Rogan's got a great job, but yep. We don't. And I think, you know, there's a small percentage of people where they do it. It's just that a majority of those percentage of people who make money on YouTube seem like they would suck as humans. So yep. There's a combination there that just, you know, I'm not quite into.
Rubs you the wrong way, as they say.
But hey, if enough people get into it, then whatever. I can easily be convinced to take that back.
The idea that there's people who are making money by unwrapping gifts and shit.
You know what's funny, though, but I bought a pair of these, like, headphones, these knockoff Beats headphones. Like, I thought I was just getting a good deal. And then when they came in the mail, once I had paid for them and I got all this Chinese writing, I realized, like, oh, shit, I might have just got scammed. And I did. So they came in the mail. They looked kind of legit. So I had to go to one of those unboxing videos on YouTube of some 20-year-old kid opening, like, the real thing that he got sent to him from Apple or Beats or whatever. And I'm like, oh, God damn it. Like, you know, as soon as he opens the box, I'm like, well, this is different. And, like, everything was different, so I got scammed. But I needed a YouTuber doing an unboxing to verify that I had got scammed, which, I mean, if that doesn't sum it all up, right?
We got a YouTuber now who is boxing against Nate Robinson. All right, man. Any closing shots?
That. No, it was good. It was good. All right. I was setting you up for it. But anyway, that's it. No closing shots. I haven't thrown anything at you in a while, so we're good. It's been a while.
All right. We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. We are Jim at WhiskeyCongress.com to email me, Steve at WhiskeyCongress.com to email him. Thank you for listening. We're done.